This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you've seen Juno, Superbad, or Arrested Development, then chances are you've been won over by Michael Cera's low-key but very funny performances. In Juno, Cera played Pauly Bleeker, the well-meaning teenager who had sex once with his good friend Juno, and it left her pregnant. In Superbad, Cera played Evan, a graduating senior, trying to buy some beer, stay away from the cops, and get to a party. And in the critically acclaimed but ratings-challenged TV series Arrested Development, he played the often awkward George Michael Bluth, perhaps the only sane member of the absurd Bluth family. In the new film Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, Cera plays Nick, a New Jersey teenager who's nursing a broken heart after his pretty but shallow and self-centered girlfriend breaks up with him on his birthday. Nick plays bass in an indie rock band and is convinced by his bandmates that he should play a gig with them in Manhattan and then go with them to a concert of their favorite band, even though he doesn't feel ready to leave the house yet. At the gig, he meets Nora, a smart music lover who goes to school with his ex-girlfriend. Nora can't understand why Nick dated that girl in the first place. In this scene, Nick is giving Nora a ride to another show in his battered old Yugo. Nora is played by Kat Jennings.
Can I just ask, what did you see in her? I could floss with that girl.
This is your friend that we're talking about?
Okay, forget it. I can't do this.
Do what?
Just make a U-turn and take me back to Ludlow, all right? I'll find my own way.
Perfect.
I refuse to be the goodie bag at your pity party, Nick.
I don't have to yell. It's not a train station. I'm in a tiny car.
Just drive me off.
I will.
Are you crazy?
I don't know what I did to you to make you so angry.
Nothing. You're ridiculous.
No, you don't even know me.
I know you. I know your make.
My make?
You're an emo punk band boy and you're obsessed with Triss. They can make action figures out of you, drummer not included.
You know, it's funny that Triss never mentioned you considering what good friends you are, but she did mention something that was completely jealous.
Oh, jealous?
Yeah, and
oh,
so
really?
Now I think I know exactly who she... All right, sweetheart, you think you have something to...
I am not jealous!
Oh, no, man, she's not jealous.
Michael Cera, welcome to Fresh Air. You're part of this kind of like new movie phenomenon, which is, you know, like the leading man as the guy who's not the like muscular hunk. You know, you're a guy. You look like a regular guy, and
yeah.
You look like somebody who has an inner life. Like
yeah.
You think, like you like music, like you probably read books.
What
I'm saying?
I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you saw that coming, if you knew that there'd be that kind of role for you.
Well, I never.
I should add
about
ironic
it, really.
In there.
Yeah. I never really thought about it too much. I mean, I just started acting because I thought it was fun, and you know, I was 9 years old when I started, and yeah, I just always enjoyed doing it, being on sets and working with people.
You first became famous in the United States for Arrested Development.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, that was by far the biggest part I'd ever had.
How'd you get the part?
I sent an audition tape in that me and my parents made in their bedroom. You know, it was I had actually done a Fox show the year before that never aired. But I guess they knew me from that over there, the Fox casting people. And so I sent this tape in, and they were already aware of me and brought me in to audition in person and meet Mitch Hurwitz, who created the show, and the Russo brothers, who were directing the pilot. And it went well. I auditioned with Alia Shokat, who plays my cousin in the show. We read together, and we both found out that day that we got the parts in the pilot.
Let's get back to the fact that you made an audition tape in the bedroom with your
yeah,
mother?
Yeah, well, yeah, we used to do that a lot instead of having to fly out, you know, just to audition, which, you know, it's like a one in a million shot. There's so many other kids. Because I live in Toronto, you know, we would just send a tape in.
What kind of tape? Like, what would you do? What would
well,
you, do,
you know, you
do
get
alone
some sides.
In the bedroom.
You get like the audition sides that everybody gets, and we just put a sheet up, and I would stand in front of it, and it would be like basically if I was auditioning for them in person, you know, they'd have me stand against a wall or something and read the lines. So it was really no different.
Would your mother play the other person's part?
Yeah, she would read the other lines. We've done a lot of things that way.
So what do they send you? What sides? When an actress has sides, that means
yeah, it's like
it's
one
just
scene.
Their part,
or a few scenes, you know, just so they can get a sense of how you're going to play the character.
Yeah. So what did they send you?
Well, it was a few scenes. They sent me the whole script to read, and I loved it. You know, I really loved the tone of the show. I knew what Mitch was going for, and thought it was really funny, which was really exciting to me, you know. And the scenes were like just some of the, I guess, the introductory scenes for the character, you know, in the pilot he's introduced. And so we did that scene, which I thought I kind of didn't really get a a real grasp for the character until I went to LA, because it was kind of written like an idiot, which I don't think that character is dumb in any way. And then I met Mitch, and it was kind of – there's a lot of Mitch in the character. And he told me a little more how to play it. You know, he's just genuine, and he's really trying to please his father. And so that became a little more clear. But yeah, so I did that scene, you know, where we kind of meet him for the first time, and then maybe one other one.
Let's get to a scene. We'll play a scene from deeper into the series. You've been dating a girl that your father doesn't approve of because he thinks, among other things, that she's not attractive enough and she's unworthy of you. So you're in the kitchen with your father, played by Jason Bateman.
How'd that math test work out?
Oh, it was okay, I guess, but I don't know, it was weird. I studied with Anne, but I still got a B-.
Anne got you a B-.
Well, it wasn't Anne. She's an expert in math. Isn't that cute?
Is it?
Michael felt his son was setting the bar too low with his dating standards.
No, it wasn't Anne's fault. You know, I think I just ended up thinking about the questions too long. And so by the time I put an answer down, I went with, like, my fifth choice or something like that.
Oh, George Michael, never settle for fifth choice. Something better is going to come along. She just has to.
I think maybe sitting in the back of the class with Anne is a bad idea. No, she's just so pretty. I get distracted, I guess.
Do you?
I wish I could draw her nose.
Maybe it's your eyes. Maybe you need glasses for your grades. You know, didn't you say you had a hard time reading the board, sitting in the back
row? No, I said I was in the back of the classroom. That's
yeah.
Still,
oh, well, that's what I mean.
No, but
yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
No, definitely. I'll call the eye doctor.
I guess.
I'm going to set you up an appointment. Okay.
And that's Jason Bateman and my guest Michael Cera in a scene from Arrested Development. And Michael Cera is starring in the new movie Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. That's a great scene. I mean, it shows how, like, your father means well. Like, he means to help you in that scene,
yeah.
But he's definitely doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, I love his character, you know, because he's always appears to have the, you know, the best intentions at heart. But sometimes it seems like he's, you know, just not quite putting his son first. You know, I don't know. I really love some of the things that he says in that series.
My guest is Michael Cera, and he's starring in the new movie Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Let me ask you about Superbad.
Yeah.
And, you know, the premise of Superbad is that you and the character played by Jonah Hill are two guys in that transitional period between high school and college.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to go to this, like, really cool kids party, but since you're not, like, the coolest kids, in order to get in, you're going to ingratiate yourselves and bring the beer, even though you're underage.
Right.
And as part of that adventure, you end up in a party. Another party in someone else's house. And the guys there are all kind of, they're older,
it's
they're kind of tough, they're scary.
Very threatening.
Very threatening. And they're really toying with you.
Yeah.
And then one of them thinks you're somebody else.
Right.
And
I get locked in a room with a handful of guys doing drugs, and it's very scary.
Yes. So let's play that scene. And this is from Superbad with my guest Michael Cera.
Hi.
Who is that guy?
Don't know.
Who's this guy?
Hey, fellas.
Who's
Hi.
This guy?
Who's this guy?
Everyone.
Who are you?
I'm nobody.
No. I know you. I know you. He was at that party with me, the one I was telling you about.
No.
Who is it? Remember? He's Jimmy's brother, the guy, the singer. He's the guy with the beautiful voice I was telling you about.
No, Jimmy's brother.
That's not me, man.
Oh, my God.
Sing for us. Sing.
Oh, it's not me?
No.
You're lying?
I don't mean to, you know, accuse you guys of being ill-informed.
My brother came all the way from Scottsdale, Arizona to be here tonight. And you're not going to sing for him?
Sing.
You're singer.
You sing, and you sing good.
Sing it again.
Like a bird.
No, I know. I want to.
You want a line of cocaine?
No way, man.
Yeah.
Don't make this weird. Sing.
Sing it again.
Me, me,
Turbo.
Me.
These eyes. Cry every night for you. These arms. They long to hold you. Hold you again. Boom, boom, boom. The hurting's on me, yeah.
Talk about the hurting.
And I will never be right. No, 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 no.
Yeah.
You gave a promise to me, yeah. And you broke it. You broke it, honey. These eyes are crying. These eyes have seen a lot of love, but they're never gonna see another one like I have with you. These eyes are crying. These eyes have seen a lot of love, but they're never gonna see another one.
That's a great scene from Superbad.
I like the fight thing.
With my guest, Michael Cera. We're missing the great little self-conscious dance moves that you do while you're,
right.
while you're
sitting there. There was a whole take of that was just dancing. We did three different versions of that scene. One of which was just, the guy was saying, like, you're a terrific dancer, you know, and they make me do this weird dance, which I liked that too, but I guess they like this one the best.
Tell me about singing in a way that's, like, part really pretty good and part just, like, so, like, off and self-conscious and nervous.
Well, I was just, I guess, trying to think of what it would be like in this situation where you're being forced by these guys that are high on cocaine to sing in a room, you know. It just felt like it would be really scary.
And what about These Eyes? Who chose that as the song?
I think maybe Seth and Evan. You know, it was like one of a handful of songs that they could afford. And it was between that and like
paying for the rights to
exactly.
use it in the movie.
Right. This was the only one that wasn't like hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know. And just even to have me sing it is so expensive. So, I guess that had something to do with it. And also it seemed like a song that had layers that these guys could sing the other parts of, you know.
Now, your movie Juno was a huge hit, a kind of little phenomenon. So let's play a scene from Juno.
Great.
And as everybody, I think, knows, the premise of Juno is that she's a pregnant teenager who decides to keep the baby,
right.
but find a worthy couple to give the baby to to adopt. So the movie opens with you and Juno, who are at this point very good friends, having sex that's initiated because she says she's bored.
Yeah.
And she gets pregnant, and then you're kind of in love with her, and she's kind of too cynical to even realize that or to understand her own feelings.
Right.
This is a scene where you're both in the hallway of the high school by the lockers, and because you think that she doesn't really care for you, you've asked a girl to the prom.
Right.
You tell her, she is really angry. Here's the scene.
You're being really immature. You have no reason to be mad at me. I mean, you know, you broke my heart. I should be royally ticked off at you. You know, I should be really cheesed off. I shouldn't want to talk to you anymore.
Well, because I got bored and had sex with you and I didn't want to, like, marry you?
Like I'd marry you. You'd be the meanest wife ever, okay? And I know that you weren't bored that day because there was a lot of stuff on TV and then the Blair Witch Project was coming on Stars. And you were like, I haven't seen this since it came out, and so we should watch it. And then, but oh no, we should just make out instead. La la la.
You just take Katrina the douche packer to prom. I'm sure you two will have like a real bitchin' time.
Well, I still have your underwear.
I still have your virginity.
God, would you shut up?
What are you ashamed that we did it?
No.
Because at least you don't have to have the evidence under your sweater. I'm a planet.
Wait, let me get your bag. You shouldn't be carrying it.
What's another 10 pounds?
That's Ellen Page and my guest Michael Cera in a scene from Juno. That la 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 that you do at, mm-hmm. at the end of a thought in there, was that yours or was it written into the script?
No, that was definitely in the script. I specifically remember seeing it written down.
And you do all this like self-conscious stumbling mm-hmm. in it. It's one of the things that you do so well in your performances when it's appropriate. And I guess I'm wondering about the thought process of that. Do you let it just happen in a natural way? Do you think
you know,
in advance?
Where is he
going to hesitate?
I think I got that from Jason Bateman, actually, like watching him rehearse doing things. You know, I inadvertently picked that up from him. Like, we got the scripts with Arrested Development the morning that we would start shooting that episode, you know. And so nobody, like, has their lines memorized, which I guess, you know, that would be insane if everyone did that in television. Maybe some people do it, but that's a lot of work, you know, memorizing every night. And so we would come in and rehearse the scene, and we'd all be so, you know, it would be so fresh that none of us would be familiar with it, and we'd have to keep looking at the sides. And Jason naturally kind of would do that while reading, and it's very natural, you know, and he somewhat does it in the show. But yeah, just during the rehearsals, I really, you know, this is me kind of learning how to act. And I was like, I guess that's what people do. And I guess I picked it up from him.
So what was it he was doing that you picked up on?
Well, you know, he would stammer if he couldn't remember what he was supposed to say and then look at the page. I guess it's something I kind of picked up.
You grew up in Canada?
Yep.
Where in Canada?
In Toronto.
Describe the neighborhood that you grew up in.
Well, I grew up in Brampton, which is a suburb of Toronto, which is about an hour north of the city, or maybe 40 minutes with no traffic.
How did you know and when did you know that you wanted to act?
Well, I was interested in acting when I was really young. I think I did these like classes, which, you know, where you play games with other kids and do kind of, you know, like improv games and stuff. And it's just for fun. It's not for any reason. And then you kind of like put on a performance for the parents, you know, at the end of the year. And one of the teachers one year told my mom, you should get an agent and, you know, you can make some money doing commercials or something and put money away for college. And yeah, he just really believed in me. This guy was very supportive. And me and my mom, you know, looked up agents in Toronto, and I met with one guy who didn't want to sign me. And then the next person I met with was Amanda Rosenthal, who's my Toronto agent still, and she just believed in me and, you know, and took me on, and I started going to auditions and getting parts and just loved it and kept doing it, you know, and having a lot of fun.
So you started auditioning for commercials.
Yeah.
What's the first audition you went on?
The first, well, I went on like some kind of print ad audition for Sunny D that I didn't get, but that's the first memory I have of like going to an audition with a bunch of other kids. But after that, I went on a commercial audition for Tim Hortons, which is a big Canadian coffee chain. And I got that part. It was the first commercial audition I'd ever been on. And that was extremely exciting. It was non-paying. It was just like, you know, it was just a day of basically playing, doing camp stuff, and they filmed it. And I saw it on TV a few times, and that was exciting. And after that, I went on, you know, hundreds of commercial auditions and didn't get any. I only ever did one more, a Pillsbury commercial where I poked the doughboy. And that was shortly after, I think. And then there was a long run of, like, not getting any commercial parts, which is extremely discouraging, especially because, you know, I lived in Brampton and we'd have to drive downtown to Toronto, which is like an hour drive each way a few times a week. And, you know, it's like very discouraging, and they want you to be very hammy, you know, and there's 100 other kids in the audition room. It felt really forced and uncomfortable, and I didn't want to be big, and it just, you know, there's some people that can really do that and make a living that way, and I just wasn't capable of it.
You're kind of the opposite of big. It's like you live in parentheses half the time in your roles. Yeah. You know, everything's almost like an aside.
Yeah. That's a funny way to put it.
Now, you did a series of short internet films called Clark and Michael.
Oh, yeah, they're like a little series.
Yeah, just describe the series. They're on the internet now. I don't know if you're still making them or not.
No, we're done making them, but I think they'll be on there for, you know, forever until someone takes them down. But it's on clarkandmichael.com. It's just something that my friend and I did. You know, we wrote these episodes as just like a fun thing to do. And both liked writing, and we're both writing on our own, and just started writing these things just to kill time and have something to show people. And then when we made it, it was just, you know, an opportunity to make it, which we'd never really planned on. So, yeah, we made it for CBS. CBS gave us some money to make it for their website. And it was great, and I'm happy with it.
What were you able to do because you were writing it that you hadn't been able to do in parts that were written for you?
Oh, I mean, anything we wanted, you know, I mean, I could be nasty in it, and it was a lot of that, you know, it was a lot of getting to do obnoxious things, which was a lot of fun.
Why don't we hear a scene? And this is a scene where you're going to an audition, because you're an aspiring actor in it.
Right.
So you're going to an audition, and here you are in the audition scene.
So can you say your name and agency into the camera, please?
Yeah. My name is Michael Serra. I'm with the Fresh Faces Agency, the FFA.
Okay, and what role are you reading today, Michael?
I'm reading for the part of James.
Okay. Are you James? Are you my James?
I think I am. I think this part was written
then
for me.
Then show it. Go. Lock eyes with me. Just for a minute. Feel it. Go.
You know, my little sister always said to me, aim for the stars and one day you'll be one of those stars. That was before the big wreck.
Eat James.
This thing is getting out of hand, Andy. If you don't tell someone, you're going to jail for a long, long time.
Oh, is that right, James? And how exactly are the police going to find out?
Your first mistake, Danny, was saving my life.
That's a scene from Clark and Michael featuring my guest, Michael Serra. And it's an internet-only series that's online as we speak. I hate to think that you've been on auditions as awful as that.
Oh, yeah, I definitely have. I was in an audition once where it was like a werewolf movie or something, and it was just like painful reading the lines, you know. There's definitely some painful ones, and especially when you're like, I'm not getting this part. Why am I here, you know?
Because the lines are so bad, and you have to try to read them with conviction.
You know, it's just not for you, you know. I mean, like, I've auditioned for parts where I was playing like some tough bully or something. It's like, what am I doing here? It just feels so wrong, you know, and but you just, you're told to go anyway just to, you know, so that they're aware of you, even if it's not the right part for you.
Well, Michael Cera, it's been great to talk with you.
You too, yeah.
I wish you continued success. And
thank you.
And thank you so much.
Thank you. That was great.
Michael Cera's new film, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, opens Friday.